Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, your designated driver of the airwaves, and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation. Glad to be back with you once again. We've got a packed lineup for you tonight. Lots of guests, multiple topics, news and music as well. The main guest is a contributing editor to Rolling Stone magazine and a longtime music writer, acclaimed music writer, David Brown, who has a fascinating new book out. It's focused on the events and music of 1970, a year that's sort of been lost in the shuffle. After the tumult of the 60s, the pain and divisiveness of civil rights struggles in Vietnam and all that was going on back then, not quite up to the point of the disillusionment of Watergate, but a tumultuous time that was reflected in the music of the day. This book called Fire and Rain focuses on four musical acts of note: the Beatles, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, Simon and Garfunkel, and James Taylor. Those first three all broke up in 1970, which is kind of fitting given all the crazy stuff that was tearing the world apart at that time. The book and our talk are not just about music, though. It's about the interconnection of music and world events, the interrelationships there, and what the music and the music world tell us about ourselves. I look forward to it. I think you're going to enjoy it as well. Coming up in this hour, though, I want to recap some chilling information we covered Friday night when I filled in for George Norrie about a missing persons case that probably is a lot more than just a missing person. It might actually be a serial killer case, possibly involving a long-distance trucker, maybe more than one, somebody that has an accomplice, and multiple victims over a long period of time in a particular geographic area out here in the West. Detectives are stymied at this point about this one particular missing person, but they received a whole lot of new ideas from Coast listeners on Friday night, emails and phone calls and tips. Tonight, more input on this mystery, this time from famed remote viewer Ed Dames, who volunteered to focus his energies on this case to see if he can come up with something, anything. And prior to that, though, an update on the situation involving nuclear power plants in Nebraska and the threat posed by floodwaters up there. A fairly dramatic development in the news today in that situation. And Scott Portline will be here to with his take on the story. Plus, if we can, we'll get to some of your phone calls in this hour. And at this juncture, we'll take our first break. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast. I'm George Knapp. Glad you're spending your time with us tonight. As usual, webmaster Lex and I have accumulated a pile of tidbits, oddities, and news items from the past week. We have them on the Coast to Coast website under the Knapp's News section. Among the items posted tonight, a Roswell essay from our friend Steve Hammonds, an article about Bigfoot prints, actually a family of Bigfoot prints found in New Mexico, and a warning about how tough it is to escape the clutches of Facebook. A few other goodies there as well. Check them out when you get a moment. In the news, this report from the Associated Press out of Kabul, Afghanistan: a suicide bomber blew up his sport utility vehicle outside a small clinic in eastern Afghanistan on Saturday, bringing the building down on those inside. Afghan authorities said at least 35 people were reported killed. Rebel forces in Libya have clashed with troops loyal to Colonel Muammar Gaddafi southwest of the capital city. A rebel spokesman in the Nafusa Mountains said there had been heavy fighting on the outskirts of the strategic town, 50 miles outside the capital. The rebels told the BBC they're making a push for Tripoli. A series of NATO airstrikes reportedly killed more than 15 civilians there in the past 24 hours. In political news, Representative Michelle Bachmann deflected allegations Sunday that she and her immediate family had benefited from government assistance, despite her demands to cut the federal budget, saying that hundreds of thousands of dollars for her family farm and a counseling clinic went to employees and her in-laws, but that she and her husband did not benefit. The LA Times reported today that Bachmann, a Tea Party favorite, of course, had benefited from government funds and federal farm subsidies. An examination of her record and finances showed that a counseling clinic run by her husband received nearly $30,000 from Wisconsin and the federal government in the last couple of years, and a family farm in Wisconsin where she's listed as a partner received about $260,000 in federal subsidies. Bachman is expected to announce her entrance into the presidential race tomorrow. An update on the flooding situation in the Midwest. North Dakota floodwaters have calmed a bit, according to the latest reports, but in Nebraska, it still looks touch and go, especially when you consider the stories floating around about nuclear power plants up there. Someone who has followed nuclear power safety issues ever since the Three Mile Island incident many, many years ago, and who has appeared on this program in the past, is Scott Portsline. Scott, are you there?
Yes, I am, and it's a true honor to talk with you, George.
Well, thanks for coming on to speak with us. Let's get the update. A lot of rumors and wild stories floating around about those nuke plants that sit near the Missouri River. Stories about clampdowns on reporting and information that something dire may have happened. How acute is bring us up to date on what happened today, first of all, with these floodwaters.
Okay. Well, today there was another event at the Fort Calhoun nuclear plant in Nebraska where the aqua berm, which is about a half mile long, collapsed. It was punctured by the workers there accidentally. The aqua berm was put in place in addition to the NRC-required floodproofing to help hold back the water from entering some of the important buildings and the electrical switchgear and so forth. It's a big tube, about 8 feet tall, 16 feet wide, and they fill it with water. A lot of people think it's filled with air, but that would allow it to just float right away. This is filled with water, and somehow in the course of the last evening, just about 24 hours ago exactly now, one of the workers using a piece of equipment somehow punctured that and let all the water out. So they're currently looking at a way to see if they can patch that and if it's worth doing. But it allowed 2 feet of the Missouri River to flow into or surround some of the important buildings and approach the electrical transformer where they rely on for their offsite power. So at that point, they once again switched over to their emergency electrical diesel generators, and they had to do that on June the 7th when there was a fire in the switchgear. So this is the second time they've had to rely on their own power generation from the emergency generators.
In the story I read from CNN, it said the power company officials or executives are saying that danger of flooding the containment area is zero, that they've got all kinds of other kind of backup systems and sandbags and things of that sort. How acute is the danger? Is it something above zero?
Well, the main concern will be the loss of electricity and fires that could result if there's an electrical short. I'm not too worried about the core, the reactor itself at Fort Calhoun, because that's been shut down since April. And although it is in a more vulnerable condition without the reactor head on top, that's opened up now for the fuel transfer that takes place. The fuel is in a cold shutdown state, so it would take an extraordinary event like an explosion to rearrange that fuel into a configuration to allow it to heat up again. But I am concerned about the spent fuel pool, and the problem is that if you lose electricity, then you have to rely on a backup emergency diesel generators, which are somewhat faulty. They've been notorious for failing at times. And what would happen, it would take about 3.5 days, however, for the spent fuel pool water level to go low enough due to overheating, boiling away slowly.
Well, let me ask it this way, Scott. If you had family, if you had loved ones living in the vicinity of that plant, would you tell them to get the heck out of there?
No, not at this point. I'd be telling them you check the news every couple hours. But I really don't expect there to be an accident there, but I do think that it's being tested. And we're finding out that some of the defenses that these plants claim to have put in place wasn't actually factual. They found lots of problems last year with the flood protection at Fort Calhoun where it wouldn't have stood up during what's happening right now. And in addition to that, we're seeing reports that the expected high levels of flooding all across the nation with the global warming or whatever is causing this trend exceeds many of the nuclear power plants, including the one in my backyard, Three Mile Island.
Tell me this. The power companies, I know in earlier stories that I read, they put up this rumor control center. We're going to fight back against all the wild stories and rumors that are flying around about dangers that are up here. Yet you know, it doesn't look like they've been all that forthcoming about what has gone on at their facilities. Am I misreading that?
No, you're exactly right. They're partly to blame. The rumors get started because people don't know how to interpret some of their documents, aren't familiar with their vernacular. And then some people, I think, just like to be the first to say something's going to happen. And then that causes the undue alarm with a lot of people. And so I was on this program about 10 days ago trying to fight some of those rumors. But an interesting thing to show you how poorly worded some of the NRC documents, the last line of a press release from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission issued about the rumors was, controlling the rumors has been as difficult as combating the rising flood levels.
Yeah, they need a new PR firm there. Scott Porcelain, thanks for coming on and giving us that update. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
One other story I want to touch on here, and it relates to something I said at the introduction of the program and the program and interviews we had Friday night. It's out of Sparks, Nevada. Associated Press is reporting this. A Nevada trucking company under scrutiny for a fiery crash with an Amtrak train that left at least six people dead. This company has been cited repeatedly by state authorities for crashes, unsafe driving, and operating a truck with tires so bald that the vehicles had to be taken off the road. A driver working for John Davis Trucking, that's the company, out of Battle Mountain, that's the town, smashed through crossing guards and into this double-decker cars of an Amtrak train on Friday, killing the driver and at least five other people on the train. The broadcast reports I saw today, they still have about 28 people that are unaccounted for. They might have got off the train, though, earlier. Federal records reviewed by the Associated Press on Sunday show that the Nevada Department of Public Safety has cited this company for two crashes in the past 2 years, including one in February of last year that injured someone in Washoe County. Now, the timing of this crash is of some interest here at Coast to Coast in light of the program we had Friday night. If you tuned in, as I substituted for George Norrie Friday, you know we had a barn burner of a show. You listeners jumped into this missing persons case with both feet. Actually, it might be something much larger and more sinister than just a missing person. It's a story about a missing man, Pat Carnes, who vanished in mid-April while driving along Interstate 80 from Ohio, I think it was, toward his family in Reno. And his car was found between Battle Mountain and Winnemucca, two towns along I-80 there here in Nevada. There is at least circumstantial indications that he might have been traveling in tandem with a trucker. As we pointed out on Friday night, there have been other mysterious disappearances in this same stretch of asphalt, and lawmen are now looking at the possibility that a serial killer is operating in that region. Several hundred Coast to Coast listeners sent in tips or ideas and phone calls about this case. We have some video images on the Coast website from Friday night. I think Lex has put it on tonight's page as well, if you care to take a look. Dozens of people called us to talk about it, to provide ideas for the undersheriff, Curtis Cull of Humboldt County Sheriff's Department. He's sort of the lead investigator on this Pat Carnes case, but is also looking at other people as well. Some have suggested that this truck that ran into the train might not have been an accident. A couple of you listeners sent that in. Maybe this driver who slammed into the train heard the promos for this program, was a Coast to Coast listener, realized that the whole world was going to be looking for him after the show aired, and decided to end it all. Now, I think that's a far-fetched idea. It's a little bit stretched, but I don't put it out of the realm of possibility. The fact that this trucking firm that this guy worked for is located in Battle Mountain is significant, because the investigators looking at this case think it's entirely possible that if it's a trucker who's responsible for the disappearances, he is at least familiar with that area, might even be a resident of that area. And of course, Battle Mountain is right there in the heart of it. But, you know, I think since this company has a string of safety problems in the past, it is possible that we're reading a bit too much into it. And I can assure you, though, that the detectives working this case of Pat Carnes and the other two people that we know for sure are missing are going to look into this connection. I will also say to all of you who sent emails and ideas that you sent them in, it's going to take me a while to answer them all, but every single one of them will be forwarded right away to the police who are working on these cases. And I can tell you for certain they are welcome, no matter how obscure or unlikely or small the ideas or tips that they might seem. The detectives will look at all these ideas you submitted. The family of Pat Carnes is deeply thankful for the tremendous response generated by that program the other night. Several of you suggested that maybe a psychic or remote viewer should be brought into this case. It's a suggestion that I made to the family of Pat Carnes and the police. They had already considered it. A couple of psychics have volunteered to help. They've sent me emails, and I'm forwarding them as well. The police say, look, we're open to all ideas. Psychics are not our first line of investigative tools, but we're open to it right now because the leads that they had prior to the program Friday night had all sort of dried up. Our senior producer, Lisa Lyon, thought that maybe famed remote viewer and teacher of remote viewing, Ed Dames, who's been on this program many times, might focus his abilities on the case and see what he comes up with. He agreed to do just that. He is joining us now. I'm assuming, is Ed there on the phone?
I'm here, George.
Ed, thank you very much for being here. Did you get to tune into the program Friday night at all?
I didn't until Lisa Lyons tipped me off that maybe I asked if I could help. And then I listened to it, and I was enthralled. And it pulled at my heartstrings. I had very little time to take on new projects, but I had to take a look at this because, it was very
moving.
Heartfelt, yeah.
I had the same sort of reaction. I get a lot of stories on my plate, but I met the family and went around and traveled with them up there on I-80 as they handed out flyers looking for any clue about their dad, and it can't help but grab you.
I never work with families, by the way. I only work with law enforcement. The irony here is that Sir Ben Kingsley played me in the movie Suspect Zero. Tom Cruise asked me to train him for that. I have a cameo in there as an FBI remote viewing instructor, but that movie was about a remote viewer hunting for a serial killer who was a long-distance truck driver.
That's a spooky movie.
Sadly, I did spend some time, probably about 8 or 10 hours on the case. That's all I could spend on it. And Pat Carnes' body is about 23 miles east of Winnemucca. So I will be working in the Elko area next week. When I do that, I'll swing by the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office and show them exactly what I have.
So to walk me through the process, though, you spent 8 or 10 hours. What did you do? You sat down and went through the
protocol? I'm specifically looking for, and all remote viewers are trained to do it this way, looking for Mr. Carnes' location. Doing that, it only takes about 20 minutes to determine if a person is dead or alive, and he is not alive.
Are you saying he's buried somewhere, or is he buried? Do you know?
Well, no. That takes more time to look at. Right now, my primary focus is on his location, so that's what I need to give to the undersheriff when I'm there. The rest of the details can be filled in later, but the most important thing first is to find him. Correct?
Agreed. Did anything else come through? For example, any kind of hints about who might be responsible for this?
No, that's a separate project. Our work is very, very systematic and rigorous, so we have to turn our attention to one thing at a time, unconscious attention. And that has to be set up as a different problem, the MO, how many people involved. What we do what we're trained to do is look at the death event. If there is a death involved, we look at all of the circumstances surrounding the death, how many people, where, MOs, weapons, those kinds of things, and that's a separate problem other than location.
And was it a hard one for you to focus in on? Was it hard for you to get the answer? You said it normally takes like 20 minutes, but this took 8 or 10 hours.
No, the location, we got a location down to about a mile or so, and that the location data to get down that to that degree of precision requires about 6 to 8 hours. To determine alive or dead is about 20 minutes.
Tell me this, is the process polluted? You listened to part of the program Friday night. You got an impression about the guy. Do you have to be sort of a clean slate, though, as a remote viewer to go after something like this? Or does seeing his image, Pat Carnes' image on the Coast to Coast website, does that affect the process?
No, we need the image is good to have because it's easier to lock onto a target when you have a photo. For instance, if you're investigating a crime where you do not know where the perpetrator is unknown, when you finally get ground truth and you walk up to the site where this perpetrator is, let's say Whitey Bulger in Santa Monica, if you have a photo of the perpetrator, you can point to the police and say there he is. But if it's an unknown entity, then then it's a much more difficult problem. We have to sketch the face and the car and those kinds of things. No, there's no pollution. Professional remote viewers are trained not to be concerned or distracted by those kinds of things.
Well, Whitey Bulger is an interesting example. You didn't take that one on, did you, before?
When I took, not him, but the FBI asked me to help on the Unabomber case. In fact,
I want to ask you about that. Would you mind sticking around for a couple of minutes?
Of course.
All right, thanks. We'll be back with Ed Dames. Go to the phone lines with some of your questions as well. And then David Brown talking about Fire and Rain, the year of 1970 at the top of the hour. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. The Beatles Get Back from what turned out to be their final album ever. And that's significant. In fact, all the music you'll be hearing tonight in the bumpers picked by Jason and myself is from all these selections are from 1970. And as you listen to the accumulation, all these songs, you realize what a heck of an incredible, significant year in music 1970 was. And we'll be talking with David Brown, author of this new book, Fire and Rain, about the meaning of both musical and political and social of what was going on in the on the planet in 1970 and how it has affected the people that we have become, the world that we have become. Right now, though, we're talking with Ed Dames, a famed remote viewer. He teaches remote viewing. He's agreed to use his talents to sort of look at this missing persons case that we focused on the last couple of nights. We've just heard the news about what he feels has happened to Pat Carnes, or at least where Pat Carnes is. That's tough news to deliver to a family. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the process and then open up the phone lines as well with your questions. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM. Ed Dames, how touchy is it? How tricky is it to deliver that kind of news? I mean, you're not saying absolutely that that is the case. This is your impression that Pat Carnes or his body, his remains, are somewhere 23 miles east of Winnemucca. That's delicate ground, though, isn't it, to make that announcement when you presume that his family would be listening?
That's why I don't work with families, only law enforcement. That's one of the reasons.
Were you able to get any kind of an impression about his dog, Lucky? The two were described as being inseparable.
No, we're not psychics, George. When we focus attention, it's specifically on the target, and the target was him, not the dog. I'm a dog lover, and I would love to know more about the dog, but there's just not enough time. We have missing kids searches and things like that. I wanted to say something tangentially, not to change the subject.
Sure.
You were talking about the Beatles, and their original photographer, the one that came to the States with them the first time they came to the U.S., was my photographer when Life magazine did an article on me many years ago, too. And he said, Ed, you don't smile enough. And I listened to him because he interviewed all kinds of politicians and people. And I said, well, I'm a serious guy. And he said, you got to smile more. He said, I've interviewed all kinds of people. And even if they're lying through their teeth, when they smile, people believe them. I said, but I don't lie. Anyway, that's history.
Well, just between you and me, I get told I don't smile enough either, and I'm a fairly serious guy, but I think I'm pretty happy. Let me talk to
George,
you,
George. It's a closure. It's the idea of closure. When I listen to this story, it's heartbreaking, and if this were my father, and this was a four family member, you know, I want closure too, and we've got it. The ground truth is we need to find this person and lay him to rest the right way. And then, most of all, as far as I'm concerned, we need to secure justice.
How often do you get contacted by law enforcement, or do you volunteer to help law enforcement, or is it a combination of both?
No, it's a combination of both, but I because we're so resource limited, look at things on a case-by-case basis, and almost in all cases in terms of people, it's missing endangered children. I have two right now I have to bring closure to. They're both dead. There's another one that's living, and I cannot talk about that. The dead ones are Tangina Hussein in Detroit and Kieran Harmon in Portland. We need to find their bodies.
You and I have never met. I've never had a chance to interview you, but of course I've been following the developments in remote viewing for a long time, and anyone who follows it would have to know your name, and you're a controversial guy. I mean, some people absolutely love you and swear by your abilities. Other people's, every time you come on the show, I know that the program would get emails, that guy's a crackpot, because the nature of your work. I mean, even Hal Putoff And the Ingo Swann and the folks who developed the protocols for remote viewing recognize that it is not 100%. It's it is what it is. But you've had some spectacular hits. You've had some spectacular misses. It comes with the territory, I guess, huh?
The two points here, apropos to the subject at hand, would be that this is evolving. It's been 25 years since I was operations and training officer in the Psi spy unit, the military unit, and this has evolved too. Yes, of course, I've made mistakes, and we have some spectacular hits to our. There's a link posted on that lets your webmaster
right.
post a free remote viewing DVD.com. You can see the hits there. It's pretty spectacular too. But it's evolved. And many of my students are now evolving it even further. So it's got a long way to go. This is a nascent science, very nascent, but it's still a very powerful one.
Has it changed? The attitudes of law enforcement changed? I know, there were years gone by, they would reluctantly employ the services of a psychic, and that had, wildly different kinds of results, mostly not very good results. I would want to know, even after Suspect Zero in the movie comes out, about you helping somebody like you helping the FBI, has it changed at all where they're more willing to at least or open to the possibility that it might be valuable?
Of course they are, but it's still, let's face it, we're going to need a good track record before it opens up to many, before they really open up and cotton up to the idea of using remote viewers. And that's my job, is to establish a track record, and we're just in the mid stages of that right now. We need to have a solid track record, something where we can stand and deliver time and time again, systematically, before law enforcement will really stand up and take note. That makes sense.
That's understandable. A couple of people on the phones with questions. I don't know, for you or me or comments. East of the Rockies, Shelley in Kentucky. Hi, Shelley.
Yes, hello, George. I tried to get in Friday and it was impossible, but. Now, this is not for Ed, but, he might find it interesting. This seems to be, like, possibly an adjunct to what's already going on. We've had, a couple months ago, a mysterious murder of an elderly couple. This is in Boone County, Kentucky. The man, they're both connected with their church. He's a deacon. She's an organist. They have no suspects whatsoever. I mean, there's no children, no family to suspect. The home was not broken into. Apparently, they weren't robbed. So the connection here is that the husband was very instrumental in starting a truckers, like a mission or a small chapel for truckers in up in Florence, the city where that's the big truck stop. Now, this is off of I-75, but he, just from his pictures, he looks like a big talker. And, it seems like he could have, as these stories are going, got into a conversation with possibly a youngish guy, I'm figuring, and maybe said, well, why don't you come on home with me and my wife and I'll give you a home-cooked meal? Because there just wasn't any struggle or anything. And like I said, they keep talking about it from time to time. They have no clues. They had a photo of a man that was the last seen talking to him at the truck stop, and they found him down in Georgia, and, I could describe him, but they say he's not a suspect.
I'm very interested in this. We kind of want to sort of keep it focused on the case that we're talking about at hand here.
I just wanted you to know that there might be another link.
Another one.
That if you want to talk to the investigator, to contact the Boone County, I think his name is Shaban, and I'm sure he'd be most happy to talk to him.
I'm going to pass that on to Curtis Cull, the undersheriff there in Humboldt County, who's working on this case. He's willing to take any kind of lead and follow any kind of tip up. So I appreciate you telling us about that, Shelley. West of the Rockies, Kevin in Colorado Springs. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. Good evening, Major Dames. I got a couple questions for you. The first one is, I'm blind. Is it possible to do remote viewing? Now, I lost my sight later in life. I've not been blind from birth. So I've had sight. And I'm curious, is it possible to do remote viewing if you're blind?
It's easy to do, but it's difficult to teach. You actually have to have a one-on-one teacher. I've taught blind people before, and I have to actually hold their hand and show them how to sketch the template. So we have certain fundamental that we go through. I have to show them how to do that. Once they learn that, they're on their own.
Okay. Well,
in fact, I my real challenge was a quadriplegic because somebody asked me to train Stephen Hawkins, and I said I need some practice, and so I had to actually take one of the people who asked me to teach them that was a quadriplegic and teach them remote viewing, and I succeeded, but it was very difficult.
How are they able to draw?
They use a pen in their mouth.
I see.
And now I would think. Somebody, is it possible, like if you're teaching me, for instance, would it be possible for me to describe the picture for you? Because I live in a world where pictures have to be described to me. And so, you know, I'm kind of used to describing things to other people in that same way.
But no, we deal with this all the time in our work. I would point out to Helen Keller. Helen Keller was blind from birth, but she had a better apperception of colors than most of us, you and I.
Yep.
Because she would touch somebody and say, tell me about chartreuse, tell me about magenta, tell me about lime green. And these people would tell them the feelings that they had vis-a-vis their responses to these different colors. That's how she put together a thesaurus of colors for herself, even though she was blind at birth, and could effectively talk about colors.
Yep. And the other question I have real quick, this last woman that was on just before me got me to thinking, evil. Have you ever just remote viewed evil? And
yes. Yes. And yes. Short answer is yes.
What do you come up with when you do that?
I don't want to get into it. It's a complex thing, but it exists, and it's a real... It's a powerful paradigm. At minimum, it's a powerful paradigm. That's all I want to say about it.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate that. Ed, let me ask you this. Do you get into, I know you can, remote viewing can establish the who, what, when, where.
And how.
What about the why? Do you get into the heads of people? Let's say you're looking for someone responsible for what happened to Pat Carnes. Can you get into the head, figure out motivations, see what kind of twisted stuff?
Deep Mind Probe. We did this for. I did this personally for the then Vice President of the United States, and what the heck was his name? The minor guy.
Which Dan Vice
Quayle.
President?
Dan Quayle.
Okay.
He asked me. We did a deep mind probe of Saddam Hussein to see if he had any what his intentions were, what his intents were. Prior to the first Desert Shield. Yes, we can do that, but I only do that with, I make a call. I don't think just because we have the skill and the ability to do it doesn't give us the license to do it. So I have some, I don't teach ethics, but I have my own, and I'll make some exceptions sometimes for people like that.
First time caller, Don in California. Hi, Don, what's on your mind?
Good evening, gentlemen. I deliver for one of the largest food chain stores in the United States and travel the I-80 corridor between Sparks and Winnemucca. I wanted to get some information for the sheriff's office. I did see something around the April time frame and just wanted some contact information.
All right. Well, Curtis Cull is the undersheriff of Humboldt County Sheriff's Office. We have links on the Coast to Coast website if you have access to that. If not, send me an email, georgeknapp@coasttocoastam.com, if you want to leave some contact information, we'll get back to you. But you can find Curtis Cull, the undersheriff of Humboldt County, online. He's got a little section put up there where he is actively seeking information about this case. So if you saw something, that would be awesome.
Okay, yeah, it's a very desolate area, especially the middle of the night, and anything odd strikes the driver is extremely odd.
Can you tell us what you saw?
I was coming into just west of Winnemucca. There's a Pilot truck stop that I planned on shutting down in. We backhaul out of Winnemucca, and I kept seeing a pair of headlights, which was at an odd angle. There's a large medium across I-80 between the west and eastbound sides. As I got closer, I saw that there was a trooper up there flashing us over me over onto the shoulder away from whatever it was. And the little pickup facing the westbound direction or in the eastbound lane. And it had to be that time frame in the middle of the night.
Do you remember the date?
No, I actually called the office. I was listening to your show Friday night and called the office. We use electronic logs, and there is a way for me to pull my logs and find out. It's just not going to be an easy thing.
April 14, April 15 is the time frame we're looking at there.
It's somewhere in that time frame.
George, was it 13? Wasn't it the 13th?
I'm going to have to look it up here.
I think it was the 13th. I'm not sure.
Okay. All right. I'll tell you what, I'll have to look it up and come back to you. I know it's right in that time frame. So I was just getting a general idea if the caller, Don, was driving in that particular week.
Okay. Yeah, I've only been there with this customer three times. And the first one was very beginning of February. And the last one was a couple of months ago. So it was definitely in that time frame. And it would probably be something easy to check out as there was a trooper standing there.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it, Don. And if you can't get a hold of Curtis Cull at the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office, you call back and let me know, and I'll put the two of you in touch, okay?
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Thanks a lot. Wildcard Line, Eric in Michigan. Hi, Eric.
George.
How you doing?
Thanks for being there tonight. You are a most stellar talk show host. I hope you'll get more time on the air with Coast to Coast.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And for Ed, I would ask regarding remote viewing accuracy, would it not be advantageous, since no one has a totally stellar accuracy record, to utilize the brain power of Hal Putoff, Ingle Swann, et cetera, to really nail it down? And then the second question, if I may, real quick, hypothetically, if I were a remote viewer and I wanted to combat the Bilderberg skull and bones Illuminati conspiracy people, or as I say, life forms, would it be within the realm of possibility for a group of remote viewers to focus on those key individuals, which are pretty well published now, and, by whatever mechanism, as you said, a deep mind probe, would it be possible to induce some sort of a bad hair day?
No, it's not that. The best thing you can do is expose what they're doing, and that's it. That's what we do. It's an intelligence collection tool, an information collection tool. That's to expose anything that out there. That's the power of remote viewing. In terms of the laboratories have been doing the same thing for the past 35 years, over and over and over again. It's out on the streets where that progress has been made in remote viewing, because we've had to make the mistakes time and again, fall on our face, pick ourselves back up, dust the dust off, go back to the drawing board, what did we do right, what did we do wrong, on many different types of cases. It's not just the old adage of don't say you have 20 years of experience when all you have is 1 year repeated 20 times. We've worked tons of a variety of cases and learned a ton of stuff. In the laboratory, because of what they have to do in terms of standardization, they've got to do the same old tired tricks over and over again, and they're still doing it. We are way far beyond that. When we demonstrate on the streets the power of remote viewing, and that's going to be real soon, when that's demonstrated, then the academicians have to stand up and take notice and say, okay, like I've gotten emails from Rhea White, who was the secretary for the American Parapsychological Research Association, said, Ed, how are you doing this? We can't do this in the laboratory. So I have to respond and say, well, this is why. Because we have real-world situations, not Zener cards and not the Ghostbusters type of mentality. This is systematic. We had to use it in life-or-death instances and in the military where deadly force was required. So it's real-world stuff.
Tell me this, Ed. Do you have sort of a pecking order, a sense when you do one of these of how accurate it is? I know I am right on. I'm 90% sure about X, but I'm only 40% sure about Y.
No. What we do is we're training a certain protocol. Whether we're looking for somebody's missing wallet, missing cat, or stolen nuclear weapon, the protocols are always the same. It's like sheet music. And the only question because we don't know the answers. Most of our targets are unknowns, right? we're trained against training targets. That's what I do is I teach. You go to learnrv.com. I teach online, and I can bring people up to speed also on this present case with Pat.
Remote viewer and remote viewing teacher Ed Dames, thanks for coming on. I appreciate your input.
Yep, pleasure of mine.
By the way, you were right. It's the 13th is when the last time Patrick Carnes was seen. However, his car was found on the 14th, and then an investigation started after that. Thanks. If you have any suggestions or tips on this case, folks, keep them coming in, and I'll forward them to law enforcement. Up next, David Brown talking about 1970, the lost story of 1970, and his new book, Fire and Rain. Stay with us here on Coast to Coast AM.